Welcome to Career Conversations. My name is Siobhan Murphy, a careers consultant here in DCU Career Service. And joining me today to unpack environmental science careers is Fiona McCool, who is an inspectorate with the Environmental Protection Agency. So first of all, thank you very much, Fiona, for coming on the show today and discussing all types of environmental science careers, but particularly those that, you know, are present in the EPA. So we just might start off, Fiona, and you might tell us a bit about the EPA and what is its role.
Yeah, hi, Siobhan. Yeah, thank you. So the Environmental Protection Agency, we're an independent public body. And it was established in 1993. And our role is to protect and improve the environment as a valuable asset for the people of Ireland. So we're committed to protecting people and the environment from harmful effects of radiation and pollution. So our key roles are around environmental regulation, providing knowledge and evidence, and advocating for the environment. There's about 420 people currently working in the Environmental Protection Agency, and we're based in 8 locations around the country. Our headquarters is in Wexford, but we have regional inspectorates in Dublin, Castlebar, Cork, Monaghan and Kilkenny, and then we have 2 regional offices in Limerick and Athlone, where our hydrometric teams are based out of, those who go out and do a lot of field work in terms of measuring and monitoring river and groundwater quality.
And Fiona, from a practical point of view about the roles, and like many people will be working the EPA, you know, and you obviously said they're based all the way around the country, but what would be the typical roles involved on the ground, we'll say, doing this environmental type of work?
So we have a mix of technical and administrative roles. So it's about 80% technical, 20% administrative. And so we have a real mix of types of jobs. So you'd have people working in laboratories. You have people who are out doing sampling. And you have people who are in office-based jobs, who are licensing and regulating. You've got people who are going out on site to industrial sites or intensive agriculture sites that we regulate, who are doing enforcement activities and site visits or following up on complaints. We have an environmental research program. So there's a research team that are managing a massive portfolio of research projects on areas around climate, water and sustainability. We also have a role in radiological protection and greenhouse gas inventories and emission monitoring. So it's very, very varied. We'd also have a legal team. We have a communications and media team. And then the EPA has a board of 5-time full-time executives on that board. And so there's a director general's office that is doing administrative work there as well. So it's hugely varied, but as I say, 80% are technical and 20% administrative.
So from the point of view, say, obviously environmental legislation then is critical then to the work of the EPA. And I suppose, would European legislation then be in part of the, you know, is EPA part of a whole European network then?
That's right, yeah. So we'd operate under, say, the Environmental Protection Act, the Waste Management Act, and the Radiological Protection Act, and then a lot of secondary legislation like statutory instruments that would bring in not just national legislation, but also European legislation. So directives like producer responsibility legislation, for example, like packaging or waste electrical and electronic equipment, but also waste framework directive, air quality, noise regulation and that. So definitely very much influenced by what's happening at European level in terms of environmental legislation and policy. And then when that's transposed into Irish law, a lot of the time the Environmental Protection Agency would get a role in terms of implementing that piece of legislation or supervising that piece of legislation being implemented by local authorities, for example. So we also would work with a lot of networks in at European level as well in relation to policy or enforcement, and also with the European Environment Agency, so with their networks. So that would be around developing guidance or evidence-based reporting. The State of the Environment report would be an example of that. So there's a European State of the Environment report every 4 years, but also the EPA is mandated with publishing a State of the Environment report every 4 years, and that's drawing together all of the evidence and information that there is around the state of Ireland's environment, everything from nature to waste to air quality, and then setting out the challenges and opportunities for the environment at that, you know, point in time for Ireland, and making recommendations for how to improve. So our latest State of the Environment report was published in 2020, and I'd recommend it as a really useful reference document. If, you know, whatever part of the environment you're interested in, you'll find, you know, really dense and dense is the wrong word, actually, because that's,
I suppose, it's deep. It's going. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. There's lots of it's evidence based, essentially. And it's the current picture of where Ireland's environment is at and the challenges and opportunities that we have. So absolutely. Like, I would think that if if I was to look across the EPA, the myriad of roles that are available to you as a science graduate or an engineering graduate as well, would be laboratory-based work, field-based work. You could be working on the policy area. You could be working on, writing licenses, enforcing licenses. You could be looking at environment and health areas. You could be looking at advocacy or communications or behavioural change for the environment. Or you could be on the legal side of things, on the prosecution side. So massive. It's a great place to work, I have to say. And I think the public sector in general offers a huge range of opportunities for graduates, because there are so many ways that you can develop and grow your role over time. And there's a great emphasis on learning and development in the public sector as well. And you will be supported in your career growth.
I think one of the things about,
very important.
Yeah, I think one of the interesting things about the public service is that you're working on the present day to day, but it always has a strategic focus. It's always looking to the next generation. Now, some might argue it's not looking at it strongly enough or deeply enough, but it would have a very strong remit looking forward to the next generations coming down the track and the impact of decisions we're making today. So it is very exciting from that point of view, and it does make a difference and contributes hugely to society by even doing those exercises, you know, as part of the general day to day.
Yes, for sure. And, you know, even if you look at something like climate, where mm-hmm. the EPA has a key role, obviously that, future proofing for the environment is a huge part of that. So our roles would be anything from environmental research, looking at the pressures there are, informing policy, providing solutions. Then there's also the work around the greenhouse gas inventories and projections, like where are we at now, projecting if certain measures come in, where we will be at in the future, are we meeting our targets? And then there's also the area of the National Dialogue for Climate Change, which is looking at how can we influence for the environment and climate change into the future, and it's also around like identifying what will make people change their behaviors. So it's that advocacy piece. So there's the regulation piece, there's the provision of knowledge and evidence piece, and then there's advocating and communicating. It's kind of those three strands that are there. So I was in preparation for talking to Siobhan. I did ask, what are the types of professionals that are in the EPA? Because, with 420 staff, and it's everything from biochemists to sociologists to planners to computer scientists to engineers to lawyers to to microbiologists, ecologists, geologists, chemists, botanists, economists, physicists, accountants.
There's room for everybody, really, is there?
Yeah, there absolutely is. And I guess just to distinguish a little bit between our role and the National Parks and Wildlife Service. So the National Parks and Wildlife Service would be responsible for, Ireland's conservation, heritage and wildlife and biodiversity. Whereas EPA's role, like a lot of it is around the regulation piece, licensing of waste activities, large-scale industrial facilities, intensive agriculture, and then enforcement of those type facilities. Then we'd have a role of supervising local authorities and their environmental responsibilities as well. So we work a lot with local authorities on their role on the ground. And then there's monitoring, analysing and reporting on the environment, and that's everything from the air quality, noise, the bathing water quality, rivers, estuarine, measuring river water levels, and then the area that I work in, which is the National Hazardous Waste Management Plan, implementing that, and the National Waste Prevention Programme and implementing that. And then the whole area of radiological protection as well. Radon is a huge issue in terms of health. And
could you tell me a little bit more about radon? Because I know years ago there was a lot of things around radon, and you'd often hear, oh, there was a problem with that person's house, there was radon found underneath it. And I suppose I don't hear about it much on a day-to-day basis, but that doesn't mean it's not there.
No, that's it. And it's basically down to the geology that's under your house. So there's certain hotspots around the country. Mm-hmm. And if you go to visit radon.ie, you can put in your air code and find out if you're in one of those hotspots. So the EPA would be responsible for raising awareness of it as an issue, because it can cause lung cancer if the levels are high in your house. And there are measures that you can take to, there's engineering solutions for it, basically, mm-hmm. if you identify. And it's recommended that if you're in a hotspot, or even if you're not, just to get radon monitoring done on your house, which is essentially getting a monitor and placing it in two or three locations in your house, leaving it there for 3 months, and then sending it back for analysis. And it's a really practical thing you can do in your own home in terms of, protecting your own health. And then I think, again, coming back to this advocacy and behaviour change, it's around how do you get people to make the changes in their home that are needed then if it's identified that they do have high radon levels in their house. So there's that piece of work going on in the EPA as well, trying to... So one thing that happened was the change to the building regulation. So our EPA advocated for that, and that now is in building regulations around radon protection for mm-hmm. new builds. But yeah, absolutely. If there was a practical thing people could do, I'd say if you haven't had your radon measured in your home, go to radon.ie, find out
if you're a hotspot to begin with. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely if you're a hotspot. And even I did it in my own home here in County Wexford, even though I'm outside of a hotspot, just for my own peace of mind.
Well, that's so interesting. But it was just so interesting you said it, because I do remember it being a big issue. And I suppose maybe over the years, as you said, when building regs have actually changed to incorporate, and that's the wonderful thing about an organisation such as EPA, that on all our behalf, that advocacy work is being done and changes are made, and that we all benefit from it then on a day-to-day basis, but we don't even know we're benefiting from it, because it's just, it's in some respects designed out, the problem is designed out. So yes. That's really powerful when something can be designed out, and then we don't actually have to make decisions at all. You mentioned some of the graduate type roles, and is there opportunities for internships then during your college degree with the EPA, or how does that work?
Yes, there are. Yeah, we do have an internship placement program, and it's open to anybody who's required to do a placement as part of their college course. So they're generally third year placements, and So it's a paid placement, which is good to know as well. And if you do apply for it, well, actually, it doesn't work like that. What it is that our own HR team put a call out across the offices and identify projects for internships. And then our HR team reach out to the placement officers in the colleges, and the placement officer then forwards us CVs from students who are interested in those projects and have the right skills for the placement. And then there's a process of shortlisting and interviewing for the placement.
Mm-hmm.
So what you'll get for it is you'll get the experience and opportunity of working with the EPA, which is a good start to your professional career. And you'll work with the professional teams in the EPA on delivering a defined project that's going to address a knowledge gap that we have, a need that we have within our offices. And then if you're an intern in the laboratories, you're going to get an opportunity to work with the latest lab equipment and develop and validate new test methods and procedures. So I'd highly recommend it if you're in a college where you're going to have a paid placement. You will get practical tasks and you'll get challenging tasks, and you'll be mentored and you'll have a supervisor. So that opportunity is there to apply for.
Brilliant. And just talking about careers, we like to ask our guests as often as we can, Fiona, maybe to share their own career story, because often we meet people maybe like yourselves that have progressed very well in your career, but you know, we don't always see the earlier hard steps that maybe you had to go through in order to get to where you are now. So do you mind maybe just sharing your own highlights of your own career story, so it just might help the listeners understand your particular path into the EPA. And it might help them in their own journey on this in this career.
Yeah, of course, happy to. So my background is, my undergraduate degree is science in Trinity, and I specialised in microbiology. But when I came out of college, it was in the middle of a recession most of your listeners probably won't have been born.
But they've been in other recessions and will be in others as well. So it's a cyclical thing anyway. So, yeah.
That's true. But I guess my first job was working for a company that did clinical trials. So they were setting up a database at the time for data entry of their clinical trial paper reports into a database, and they took me on as a microbiologist around the pathogens and setting up the database in relation to that. So it was an interesting introduction to IT. But after that, I moved and I worked for Bristol Myers Squibb, which is a pharmaceutical company based out in Swords, and I was working in their environmental lab. So that was very varied and interesting, because I was doing lab analysis. I was also doing a lot of sampling around the site, big pharmaceutical site. It was everything from groundwater sampling to dust sampling, wastewater treatment analysis. But it made me very interested in the area of environmental sciences. And at the time of my undergraduate degree, that wasn't an option to specialise in. But Trinity were running an MSc in environmental sciences. And I applied for that and I got a place, about 15 of us. And I absolutely loved that. And when I came out from there, I briefly worked in a campus company, but I was applying to work in the EPA. And I got an opportunity to go in at, I started at a graduate entry level in the EPA, working in licensing. And I've had very varied roles in the meantime, but just kind of a potted history of that. So I would have worked in licensing and enforcement. So I would have been assessing applications that came in for licenses from industrial facilities, and then going out and doing enforcement. And I spent a period of time administering the prosecution side and working with our solicitors on bringing prosecutions. Then I had a role in terms of leading on enforcement of the WEEE regulations. So that was the Waste Electrical and Electronic Equipment Regulations. So that was around making sure that everybody that was supposed to have registered as a producer, people who put it on the market, had applied, and then making sure that those regulations were enforced around the country. And then, like in the last 10 years or so, I've really been focused on waste. So initially it was on waste statistics. So collecting all the information about waste, validating it, and then reporting it. Is Ireland meeting its targets? Anything from recycling to recovery, diversion from landfill. But it was also not just that, it was also reviewing waste legislation, inputting to waste policy, making submissions on waste policy, setting up a website. And now, more recently, I'm a manager on the National Waste Prevention Programme. So my whole role is around preventing waste and driving circular economy in Ireland. And that would be done through developing partnerships. Again, advocacy and communication is a big part of it. And innovation and demonstration programs. So you can see it's been very varied. But as I say, through my career in the EPA, I've been really supported. And I've moved from technical roles to administrative roles, back to technical roles. And I've also been given the opportunity to be funded for additional learning. So I've done an MA in public management since Brilliant. I joined the EPA. So just to emphasise that opportunity piece again for the public sector, you know, the opportunities there are for lateral mobility, for secondments, and you know, the huge range of roles that there are within an organisation like the EPA that you can move into, or you can train up or do extra study to move into if that's your area of interest.
Yeah, because your interests evolve over a period of time, you know.
Absolutely, yeah.
They do evolve, yeah. And new things come along and the legislation might change, or just the general, you know, culture changes and things like that. So there's just the great scope. So where you start in any organisation is not where you finish up, you know, or it shouldn't be, you know, if you're being involved in managing your own career. And I think that's one of the things that maybe you're saying quite rightly there, that the EPA is very supportive. But realistically, it's very important to be, you know, in the driver's seat of your own career management, and, you know, and to put a focus on yourself, on your career, and how you can keep developing.
Yes, that is very true. That whole aspect of self-development, and, you know, I don't want to say like knowing where you want to be, because sometimes you don't, but no. if you see the potential that is there for your own growth, mm-hmm. and you work actively to, you know, whether that's asking somebody to mentor you, whether you look for coaching in a particular role, whether you see, you know, look a bit more widely and say, look, you know, actually, I find I'm pretty good at communication. Maybe science communication is where I want to go. And within an organisation where you could move to, or just even within your own role to develop that. It doesn't have to be that you move to a new role. It could be something within your own role that you develop.
So, or just get co-opted onto a different project, you know, that's outside your normal sphere, can be a huge icebreaker into a field, you know, of interest that you're a bit curious about. And then you can see, well, what if I really was to go into this further, I'd need to bootstrap myself up with more skills here, you know.
That's it. Yeah. Yep.
One of the things that we had talked about when we're preparing for this session as well, and just during our chat, Fiona, is that we realise the EPA does an awful lot of work in around that big picture stuff for Ireland. But even moving on to some of the stuff that you were talking about, in around, you know, the waste management and different things. And we got to talking about, because one of the things that's dear to our heart this year in particular is, you know, things that people we can do this summer, or things that we can do at an individual level, whether, you know, we're a student or a staff member or whatever we are and whatever role we are, and as a listener to this show, and kind of say, well, what can I personally do that will actually make a difference, or how I would improve my own understanding of what I, how I can contribute effectively to the environmental challenges that we are actually facing. So you've some pretty good ideas, you know, and we obviously talked as well that there was nearly two categories. There was things around developing your career interests in environmental science careers, and then just general interest in the environment. So we might take a look at, for anyone that's interested in the environmental careers first, although it could probably be a bit of a mishmash anyway, but we'll start off and see how we get on, Fiona.
Yeah, perfect. Well, I guess if you have an interest in the Environmental Protection Agency, I would say one of the practical things you could do is just start following us on our social media platforms. So we're on all of the usual ones, LinkedIn, Instagram, Twitter, and so on. And it just gives you a bit of an ongoing knowledge of what's going on and what reports we're issuing and our areas of interest. Again, linked to your career pub register on publicjobs.ie, because again you can pick the categories you're interested in, get an idea of the jobs that are being advertised, and get familiar with different types of application forms and requirements that there'd be. Driving is an essential requirement for some EPA roles, so I know driving lessons are out of the picture at the moment with COVID restrictions, but even to apply for your theory test and do your online preparation for that and get yourself ready for when driving lessons open up again. It's really practical life skill. Languages, I know generally if you're a science graduate, maybe you've specialised at a secondary level on science subjects. But like what I see now at this stage of my life is that opportunities for a lot of European roles, they open up a lot if you've got a second language. So if you were interested in moving into European Commission, European Parliament, or you know Eurostat, or any of the European agencies, even European Environment Agency, having a second language is a huge opportunity in terms of applying for those kind of jobs. So then, just on the environment side, one thing to consider is that there's Ontashka Run, the National Spring Clean, every April. They've been running this for years, and there's different restrictions now this year because of COVID, but they are running it and it's open for registrations at the moment. And back in 2020, they had over 500,000 volunteers and they collected over 3,000 tons of litter. So it's something you can do in your own locality, within your 5 kilometres, clean up your area. And, you know, it's a practical thing. If you're lucky enough to be living near the beach, Ontashka also run the 2-minute beach clean program, and you can volunteer on that. And it's 2 minutes on your beach walk, picking up litter as you go. So, you know, I always think that, you know, having volunteerism on your CV is really useful. It just shows that you're taking your initiative in terms of, you're bringing that interest in the environment in your education also to your what you're doing outside of your education. So that's something practical you can do. And then just linked to the program that I work on, the National Waste Prevention Program. So, you know, reducing consumption of single-use plastics could be something you could look at. You could set yourself a personal challenge on that area. And then food waste is a huge environmental issue, and something that through our Stop Food Waste campaign we would be communicating around what are the practical actions that you can take to reduce your food waste. So maybe consider setting your household a personal challenge around reducing food waste, and just to bring the scientific element into it as well, because it could be something that you could share on social media, or you know, some way use it as a project that you can report on in the future. But it's we call it the climate action you can do 3 times a day, because food waste has such a massive impact on climate.
I like that. So that's climate action that you can do At least three times a day. Never mind snacking. Never mind the snacking now. You were being very nice there, Fiona, saying we're only eating three times a day. Right. Okay. So, you know, three times a day, you can be actively engaged in climate management.
Yeah. And, you know, a lot of people, like what we've found through our behaviour and attitude surveys, is a lot of people think they don't
have agency in this area at all.
Yeah. And yet, at the same time, the amount of food waste that's wasted would, you know, contradict that. But like if you wanted to be scientific about it, you could start separating your food waste. If you hopefully have a compost bin at home, but you could measure it. You could analyze bread and salads are typically the commonest foods that are wasted, but see if that's the case for your household. And then the behaviour change piece is looking at the actions that are under the Stop Food Waste programme. Everything from making a list, you know, planning your meals, storing your food correctly, freezing your food, knowing to go by the use-by date. I mean, there's a whole range of practical actions you can take and seek to influence your household and make that change and, you know, monitor over a 3-month period and see how you are at the start, see where you're at the end. And like, it costs Irish households about €700 a year in
food
terms
waste.
Of food waste.
I'd well believe it.
And yeah. Even, you know, even within like an area that our programme is going to be working on, is we're going to be working with campuses over the next 2 years. And student accommodation will be one area that I know the universities have addressed and are addressing. But like, even within a shared apartment, you know, that food sharing piece, the preventing food waste, segregating your food waste, you know, again, very much linked to not just the right thing to do, but it also does have an impact on environment, has an impact on climate, has an impact on, you know, Ireland meeting its waste targets. So I would suggest maybe a personal challenge like that.
Mm-hmm. You meant just two things that struck me, and I might be going off on a tangent, you'll have to bear with me, Fiona, but just two things that struck me that I think, I suppose, just observation around the compost thing. We've kind of stalled in around the rollout of compost bins. You know what I mean? That it seems to be a feature, you know, of in some areas that you can get a compost bin collection. And then, you know, if you're outside that zone, it doesn't happen. You know, it's like as if we've kind of, you know, stalled on that. And if you're outside those zones, you must do your own composting. You know, so I don't know whether you have any new angles on that, or is there anything coming through there?
Yeah, well, you're right. When the food waste regulations came out, which required collection of organic bins, it was rolled out on, you know, with the urban population, with highest population first. And then by July 2016, it was any population agglomeration is the way it's in the legislation, of over 500 people. Mm-hmm. So basically, you know, most towns and definitely cities in Ireland have they have to have a waste organic collection service now. But under the latest national waste policy was published last September, and that's the Waste Action Plan for a Circular Economy. And they flagged there that, you know, having mandatory household collection of organic waste for all households will be coming down the line. So
I think that'll be an improvement.
Yeah.
I think that would be an improvement. Because it just seems to be something that it went on leaps and bounds, and it just kind of got stuck. You know what I mean? If that makes sense, you know, it didn't seem to develop any further. Do you know?
Yeah, and I, you know, there's probably
there's reasons why, and it's costs and everything. You know, and cost benefit analysis was probably done, and it's not always that easy. The other thing that you spoke to me before about was, you know, upcycling and, you know, just upcycling, recycling. But one of the things that you spoke about was before, it was just not buying stuff, just not, do you need it? Like, why, what are we doing? Do you know that kind of way? Like, yes. Think before you buy. I just thought that.
Yes.
This was on a pre-chat. I was kind of going like, and it does kind of, because we're very conditioned around our consumer behaviours, you know, oh, that T-shirt looks nice. Oh, I think I'd like that. Yes. Do I actually need a T-shirt? You know, we're not asking that question, are we?
Yeah, that's right. And it's that consumption piece, you know, if you think like that circular economy that I mentioned is where European policy is at in relation to resources and waste. And it's moving from a linear economy where you take resources, you make something, you use it maybe for a limited time and then you dispose it, to a circular economy where you limit the amount of resources you're taking out. You're trying to use recycled resources or secondary materials. You're making something that lasts longer, that is more durable, that's repairable, that you're reusing something, that you're preventing waste at all stages of the production process, you know, whether it's through your lean manufacturing or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then there's opportunities for repair, and then that there's opportunities for recycling that material when it does come to its end of life, so that all of those materials, whether it's plastics, metals, glass, can be dismantled and put back into processing again. Mm. And so you're closing the loop on all of those, and you're reducing hugely the amount that goes to landfill or to energy recovery. That those are kind of the lowest areas in the waste hierarchy. You don't want to be putting things to landfill. You're losing all those resources. Energy recovery is higher up than landfilling, because you're getting the energy recovery from the waste that's burned. But recycling is above that, and even better, preventing waste in the first place. So, you know, absolutely, textiles is a massive focus of circular economy. The amount of the fast fashion, there's been a lot of emphasis on sustainability in clothing, and that's going to continue. Think before you buy, absolutely. You know, single-use plastics is another area of massive focus. Is going to be change coming down the line in relation to legislation from the middle of this year onwards, which is going to be looking for more recycled content in single-use plastic products, increasing the collection targets of it, and then putting producer responsibility obligations on single-use plastics as well. So that means that producers are going to be responsible for collection and waste management costs for those materials. So that should impact on litter as well, and seeing less litter. There'll be deposit refund schemes coming in for plastic bottles and aluminium cans under new waste policy too. So there's an awful lot happening in terms of waste and waste policy at the moment. It's a very active space, and it's linked to climate action. Everything is interlinked.
Yeah, you know? I know. And it is those small things that, like, it does, you know, yes, we need to do the big things, the not so big things and the tiny things, but kind of, you know, control the controllables, you know, is always a useful one for all of us to start off with. Can I just, have you any useful websites about getting stuff fixed and upcycled, or any, you know, or guidance, you know, sites that if somebody wanted to do something themselves or get a little bit more knowledge around this area?
Yeah, so, well, there's a repairmystuff.ie website where it's an online repair directory. So you can find repairers for electrical equipment, for clothes, shoes, jewellery. That's one resource that's there. Then one of our partners in the National Waste Prevention Programme is the Rediscovery Centre. And the Rediscovery Centre runs a lot of education campaigns around circular economy. They have an eco store in their site in Ballymun,
which is on our doorstep, DCU students.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, of course. And I know they've worked with DCU in relation to their repair. They have four enterprises on their site that they're looking to roll out nationally. So Rediscover Paint, Rediscover Cycling, where they repair bikes, rediscover fashion and rediscover furniture.
Well, the rediscovering bike thing has been hugely successful in DCU. I mean, the amount of bike repair going on is phenomenal there, especially when we're on campus. Obviously, when we get back more on campus, they'll be back down. But definitely the students, you know, have loved that. Students and staff have loved that. It's been up because they come to campus and fix your bike. It's just brilliant.
Yeah, no, and I think definitely those type of interactions are fantastic. And phones would be another one. I know UL ran a repair workshops for phones where students could come and get their phones fixed. And then I'll just give you two other websites that might be of interest to your listeners. So the Conscious Cup campaign, they would have a cafe map for anybody that any cafes that accept your reusable coffee cup for refills. And then the tap map, which is refill.ie, which is places you can go to get your water bottle refilled free of charge. Okay. So it's everything from public buildings to cafes. Now, again, I know there's a lot closed at the moment, but it's good to know about these resources for when the economy opens up again.
But it's just even that principle of even thinking that, you know, it was actually interesting the last time I went through an airport. You know, the way there is always this drama about, you know, your water and then you can't get through with liquids and then you can buy water and it all gets very confusing. But and you either have it when you shouldn't have it and don't have it when you need it. You know, the drama in the airport. And then, but I just observed a girl going with her empty bottle, you know, her reusable water bottle. And she just went straight up to the cafe counter and said, well, can you fill my water? And I just said, well, I'm just after paying water. And that's all I needed to actually do, you know, do that, you know. So like, you know, there, and it's that whole concept of maybe having water fountains. You shouldn't even have to hand it over to the cafe. Do you know what I mean? Just having water fountains, like we need water to live, you know, it's not something we really, you know, if you think about it, should we be buying it at all? I don't want everyone who owns a water company to be on my back about it, but because we'll always be buying water, that's not an issue. But just, you know, in some more public places, like, you know, where you do need access to water, it would be highly useful to have some water fans.
And it is an area that we've been funding or providing grant aid to local authorities to put in drinking water fonts. So whether that was in schools through the Green Schools program or in public spaces like parks or in public community like libraries and swimming pools. So, you know, that work is happening. And also we funded Waterford City and County Council for on the Greenway to put in some water stations there. So,
and we've water stations on the DCU campus outdoor ones that you can fill up your water bottle, which is really good.
Yeah, and I think those stations might be on the tap map that I mentioned.
Oh, recently. Yeah, brilliant, brilliant. So hopefully they'll become more of a general feature across our landscape as opposed to something, you're looking at something and wondering what that is. Because I remember when I saw the water fonts in First and DCU campuses, what are they? You know what I mean? You know, but they're just not part of our normal view of life. You know, we don't see them around. So hopefully we will be seeing them, you know, more and more around our towns and villages and cities.
Yes, no, I agree, because it's a measure that would help reduce the uses, you know, the consumption of single-use plastics, you know, those beverage bottles,
Brilliant, brilliant. Listen, I've learned hugely about, obviously, the EPA itself, the roles, the depth and breadth of the roles as well, you know, and of the organisation, and the myriad of things that you can get involved, either from the science side, the legal side, the communication side, the advocacy side, that it's, you know, there's something nearly for everybody in the audience, you know, they can come from many different professional levels into an organisation such as the EPA, and they can very much develop their career there. So, and then your tips around the practical things any of us can do, highly useful and extremely pragmatic. It's all within our reach to do one thing, even from today's session. So that's been really, really useful. Thank you so much, Fiona.
You're welcome, Siobhan. And could I just mention as well for your listeners that we have a summer student program as well.
Oh, brilliant.
That, Yeah, that now with COVID restrictions, they're going to have to be remote this year.
Oh, remote is fine. Our students are well used to remote at this stage.
Yeah, we're all looking forward to be back together, but we're so used to it. But just to say this, there will be, it's open for applications until the end of March. And so students can send their CVs to recruitment@epa.ie. And then you'll be sent out an application form. Now, it's very competitive. There's no guarantee of a placement, but it's important to know that it's there. It's open to people who've completed second year of study and gone back to college in the autumn, or if you've completed your undergraduate degree and you've applied to continue studying at master's or PhD level. And it's for 12 weeks after the June bank holiday weekend it starts, and it's paid, and you'll be entitled to annual leave. And obviously you'll be supervised remotely and try and get you a project that's related to your area of study and suitability of your training and experience.
Brilliant. That is absolutely fantastic. Sorry, when we spoke earlier on the internships, I thought that's what you meant. I didn't think there was a summer one there. So sorry about that, Fiona. I should have asked you earlier about that.
Yeah, no, there's the two strands going there. So, you know, obviously the internship is generally third year, but mm-hmm. you can, the summer after second year, just bear it in mind that opportunity is there. Or if you finished your degree and you want to come and get a summer job, because again, it's something towards your CV that you've had those 12 weeks on a project that then you can talk about, because you know yourself the importance of having those examples around the competencies that you need for when you're going for a job is so important, and to be able to bring your practical life experiences to your CV.
Brilliant. So just to recap on that, if you're interested in the summer program, you need to email recruitment@epa.ie with and request an application form for the summer program.
That's right.
Brilliant. Yeah. That is absolutely fantastic. Thank you so much for that, Fiona. So we'll finish up now, if that's okay with you.
That's fine. Thank you.
Brilliant. Thank you so much. No, it was brilliant. Learned loads. It's absolutely brilliant. Thank you so much, Fiona.
Okay. Goodbye.